So good morning, everybody, and welcome to the WTO. Thank you for being here with us today, this morning. I am I'm truly delighted to officially launch the 2014 World Trade Report, and let me start by thanking Robert Tay and his team for the very hard work that they put into this. I follow that work closely from a certain point on, of course, and I saw the degree of effort and commitment that they put into this. So I thank them all very much for the hard work. So congratulations to them. I think that this is a very important document. It contributes significant further evidence of the essential role that trade plays in supporting economic growth and development. Indeed, I think we have entered a new era in the link between trade and development. There is a much greater appreciation today of just how important trade can be in economic strategic planning. We see it here in Geneva, as developing countries are now among the biggest advocates of this organization. And I see it when I visit those countries and see the work that is being done in so many places to integrate further into the global trading system. I think it was very telling that a recent study of public opinion found that across the globe, it is the African people who have the most positive view of trade today. So with this report, we have gone beyond simply making the argument that trade supports development. We've done more than that. We have taken the opportunity to delve a little deeper and to look at how the relationship between trade and development is evolving over time. More than that, we look into how we trade today. The report identifies four major trends since the turn of the millennium, which we think have considerably altered the relationship between trade and development and the way that we do business across borders. First, we look into the rise of the developing world in the global economy. Deeper integration of many developing countries into the global trading system has gone hand in hand with rapid economic growth. Then this has allowed them to reduce levels of absolute poverty for millions of their citizens and improve the quality of so many people's lives. The second trend that we looked into is the growing role of the developing countries in the global value chains, providing them with easier entry into the international trade flows at a much lower cost. Now, developing countries now account for half of the intermediate goods trade, which we use as a standard measure of global value chains, and south-south trade accounts for a quarter. So the evidence shows that participation in GVCs is associated with higher levels of productivity and income. Unlocking their development potential can pose a series of challenges for many countries. And I will come back to this a moment later, because, of course, access to the GVCs is not automatic. But like I said, I'll come back to that in a moment. Let me turn to the third trend. And the third trend that we figure out is the higher prices of agricultural and natural resources. And this has bestowed a significant benefit on commodity export in developing countries. Higher prices for agricultural goods bring broad-based development benefits because this sector employs more than half of the labor force in developing countries. The final trend, the fourth and final trend that the report discusses, is the increasingly global nature of macroeconomic shocks as a result of this greater interconnectedness. Trade can be a transmitter of shocks, but it also is a source of diversification. And the existence of multilateral trade rules provides an important safeguard. In 2008, despite suffering the greatest economic downturn since the 1930s, the world did not see a repeat of the wholesale protectionism which was experienced during the Great Depression. Such a response could have wiped out much of the economic gains achieved by developing countries since the beginning of the millennium. But of course, that did not occur. Disaster was averted. Now, the WTO's rules-based system and its monitoring of members' trade policies acted as a bulwark against an outbreak of protectionism. Indeed, the existence of the WTO has allowed developing countries to take advantage of and adapt to and mitigate risks arising from each of these four major trends. And it has done so in a variety of ways, first by enabling countries to take binding commitments, which increase certainty over their trade policies, by applying rules which offer a more equitable field, although, of course, improvements can still be made, and also a predictable trade environment. It is also providing flexibilities that better allow developing countries to undertake these commitments. So that kind of flexibility is also very important. It is facilitating technical assistance to build trading capacity within those economies. It is providing ways to solve and settle disputes in a fair and open manner. And it is providing a forum to negotiate further commitments and update rules. Now, one very important finding is that countries undertaking substantial reforms related to WTO accession were found to grow around 2.5% faster for several years afterwards. And this is not a minimal finding, by the way. So the economic changes that we have seen since the 1990s underline the fact that an open, non-discriminatory, rules-based multilateral trading system is a necessary tool to make trade work more effectively for development. So, however, the story of development, despite of everything that I have said so far, is a never-ending one, and significant challenges still remain. So, average per capita income in LDCs is just 4% of what it is in developed countries. So while many poor economies have made significant progress during the period surveyed by the report, much still needs to be done to close the development gap. And the gains from trade and from trends that I have outlined cannot be taken for granted. For example, while global value chains have a largely positive effect, they also represent real challenges for developing countries. Moving up the chain is difficult, even for middle-income countries, giving rise to the idea of what people are calling the middle-income trap. Even more fundamentally, a large number of LDCs still have a very long way to go so that they can meaningfully participate in these value chains. Turning to high commodity prices, while they are a boon to exporters, they pose a real challenge for net food importers, many of which are LDCs. So we cannot ignore that either. So much more remains to be done, especially in the poorest countries, to leverage their agricultural potential. So the state of global demand, bolstered, of course, by strong demand from emerging economies, suggests that prices of agricultural goods and natural resources will remain strong in the foreseeable future, but there are always risks of reversal. And we are, of course, seeing some of that already in the energy sector. One way the agriculture and commodity exporting countries in the developing world could continue to make progress would be if levels of agricultural protection and subsidies were reduced. Over the past two decades, a lot of energy on trade negotiations have been focused on bilateral and regional trade initiatives. But although these initiatives are welcome, and I have been saying that over and over, these initiatives, I also have been saying this over and over, cannot meaningfully address the problem of agricultural subsidies. not to mention numerous other horizontal issues. So in our view, the multilateral approach is the preferred approach. It is the best approach we have, and this is why our breakthrough in Bali last December was so important. Ministers from every WTO member finally took a major step in updating multilateral rules by unanimously agreeing to the so-called Bali package. The 10 decisions which make up the package have economic significance by themselves, particularly for developing countries, but together they also opened a new chapter for multilateral negotiations. And in this way, the success of Bali created new momentum for further negotiations, and it has still the potential to change the game. However, it's no surprise to any of you when I say that WTO members are now facing a considerable challenge in implementing what they agreed in Bali. At present, we don't have a solution to the current impasse in our negotiations. We are still working hard to find one. But as I told all WTO members last week, we have a responsibility to those who sent us here in Geneva to find ways to continue our work and to keep moving forward while still looking for a way out of the impasse. And this report shows that if we cannot make progress, the biggest losers will be the people in the developing world. They stand to lose the most in terms of foregone opportunities. Trade has made a huge difference in the lives of countless people in developing countries in recent years, and it has the capacity to deliver more developmental benefits in the future. So the international community understands the need for a continued and unrelenting focus on development. That's why they are mobilizing their efforts and resources behind the UN's post-2015 development agenda. And I think that the World Trade Report underlines that trade should be a central part of this agenda and that it should feature in the sustainable development goals which are currently being discussed in New York. So trade and the trading system have a great deal to offer. Of course, trade growth has been slow in recent years, due largely to the sluggish and uneven pace of macroeconomic recovery. On current forecasts, 2014 will be the third straight year of below-average trade growth, and we don't expect this story to change next year. But this isn't a situation that we can simply accept. We can do something about it. This slowdown could be partly remedied if we agreed on and implemented new agreements to underpin trade integration. Some of those were agreed in Bali. We all know that. And this report also shows that the reforms to international trade rules, which were agreed 20 years ago, have played a major role in the broad economic expansion that we have seen since then. But over time, the productivity gains from those reforms are gradually disappearing, and we are living off the liberalization and reforms of the past. We need to update the rules and implement a new generation of trade reforms, which would be so essential for development. And although this report shows the contribution that trade has made to development, it also shows that the potential of trade in supporting development is not yet fully realized. So the emerging trends that we are seeing and that you will see in the report, I do hope that you take a look at it and read it, suggest that trade will be a major force for development in the 21st century. So all I can say is let's make sure that that will be the case. So thank you all for listening. I suppose that I should give the floor now to Robert to make a presentation of the report in a much more detailed and precise fashion than I did. So Robert, do you care to take over?